Now here's a highlight from Coast to Coast AM on iHeartRadio.
And welcome back to Coast, George Norrie with you. We're with Jack Carr, former Navy SEAL, of course, and author of a number of books, including the recently released one, The Devil's Hand. In that book, you talk about Marburg variant U, which is a strain, a virus strain, kind of close to COVID, Jack.
Well, it is, in that we're all hypersensitive to it, as I was when COVID hit, because I was deep into the research for my fourth novel. And the basis of that novel really is what the enemy's learned by watching us over the last 20 years at war, not just these last 20 years, but the previous as well for some of the older characters. So from 1979 to 2001, which was a distinctly different paradigm when we're talking about terrorism than was 2001 up to today. But the catalyst that moves the plot forward is a bioweapon. So I went deep into bioweapon research, particularly from World War II up to today. So what did the Japanese do in World War II? Who did they use their bioweapons against? What happened to that data and that research after the war? Same thing with Germany. And the answer is it informed the bioweapons program of the then Soviet Union and the United States. So I also checked into what the conventions that we signed in the 70s, what did those mean? And I went deep on those and found out that there's something called a biodefense weapon that even if you're a signatory to these conventions, that you can still develop. Well, if you're going to develop a biodefense weapon, it means you need to also develop the weapon that you're defending against. So there's everything's based on the honor system when we're talking about international bioweapons treaties, and there's no one checking anything. So and there's a provision to develop these biodefense weapons. So it's I was hypersensitive when COVID hit, and now of course we're all quite familiar with what happens or what our country decided to do, and a lot of the world decided to do when we were hit with this virus that has the mortality rate that it does. So. When I was writing about Marburg variant U, the mortality rate is quite higher. So Imagine what we would do with something like that.
Is this a playbook for terrorists? Are they looking at this right now?
They are definitely looking at this, just like they're looking at our response to COVID-19. They're looking at our response to a summer of civil unrest that continues today. They're looking at a very contentious political season and election cycle. And they're looking for any way to take advantage, any way to divide us against one another. And so this is actually a problem that I ran into about October, November as I was finishing the novel, because for over a year, I'd looked at our country from the enemy's shoes. So if I was Russia, if I was China, if I was Iran, if I was North Korea, if I was a superempowered individual or a terrorist organization, what would I have learned? And what would I be learning during this very pivotal year of 2020? And, of course, when I outlined the book in August of 2019, I didn't know what a pivotal year 2020 was going to be. So when I got to October, November, I thought, wow, if I was the enemy, I would probably just take a step back and watch, because we're doing a pretty good job of tearing ourselves apart from the inside right now. And so I had to figure a way to write myself out of that and, for purposes of the story, make it necessary for the enemy to strike now.
COVID-19 is real, Jack, but could it be a test where governments are just trying to watch how people handle themselves worldwide?
Well, it's certainly a test. Whether or not it was that was the intent in the beginning or not, that I don't know that. But of course, when anything happens, we're trying to adapt to the enemy. The enemy's trying to adapt to us. They generally do it a little better than we do because they're not these gigantic bureaucracies like we are. They're a little more agile than we are generally. So regardless of where COVID came from, they're certainly learning from it. That's for sure. That is 100% certainty. All those countries I just mentioned, terrorist organizations, that's what they do. Is they look at us, they watch, and they figure out how to exploit our weaknesses. And they're certainly doing that when it comes to COVID-19.
Desert Storm 1991, where we went into Iraq because Saddam Hussein went into Kuwait and made a very fatal mistake, and out he went. But then we go back into Iraq in 2003 to finish the job and get him out. Should we have gone back in? Now, you were there. What did you think?
Well, hindsight's 2020, obviously.
Yep.
And we can look back and say, oh, maybe we shouldn't have done that. Maybe the Middle East was actually more stable with certain strongmen in power than it is with the chaos that we leave in our wake certain times. But one thing that we didn't do that we should have done, and that doesn't have anything to do with 2020 hindsight, is doing that requisite study, putting that time, energy, and effort into studying the problems at hand. And we had leaders that made egregious strategic decisions, namely disbanding the Iraqi army and de-bathification. So essentially creating an insurgency that sucked us in for, really through today in the region in general. But we created that insurgency by essentially putting the army out of business, and then anybody that had a job, from taking out the garbage to running the power grid, was a Ba'athist. And now they couldn't go to work. So we decided we would build up a new army and figure out how to keep infrastructure going, how to keep the lights on, how to build up a new government more friendly to U.S. interests, all at the same time. And all of that was unnecessary. And all it took was our strategic level leaders studying the past and understanding the nature of the conflict to which we were going to be engaged, and make better strategic decisions for us at the tactical
level. I agree with you. Can you clear up a rumor, too? One of the things I had heard about why we're still in Afghanistan, and this is a strange, wild rumor, is that we've got some of our military guarding the poppy fields in Afghanistan, poppy being used for heroin, I guess.
Oh, yeah, I don't know about that. I mean, there are certainly poppy fields, and there are certainly warlords, and there are certainly different alliances with different tribes and all the rest of that. That gets very gray, of course, but I don't think there's something as nefarious as us actually guarding them. Now, did we actually guard them from warring tribes as part of some, or warlords as part of some sort of agreements here and there, that sort of thing? I'm sure there were instances where we were allied with certain warlords over there that were involved in the poppy trade. And if you look deep enough, there would probably be instances where it could be seen as a guy guarding poppy fields. But I don't think it's the it's not, certainly not the main effort if we're talking about that in those terms.
Well, with Jack Carr, his website, officialjackcarr.com, is linked up at coasttocoastam.com, and his latest book is called The Devil's Hand. Tell us about the book.
Yeah, so this one was something I wanted to write. So each one has a distinctly different theme. The first one's really all about revenge without constraint, but there's a couple different levels that you can read it at, and one of those is a veteran who essentially becomes the terrorist. He becomes the insurgent that he's been fighting for the last 16, when I wrote it, now 20 years at war. Or it's about a veteran that brings those wars from Iraq and Afghanistan to the front doors of people who have been sending young men and women to their deaths now for 20 years. So that's one way. True Believer, the second one, is really a journey of redemption. And the third one, Savage Son, explores the dark side of man through the dynamic of hunter and hunted. And this fourth one, The Devil's Hand, is something I thought about while I was in uniform as a SEAL, and I continue to think about as an author and a citizen today. And that's, hey, what is the enemy learning? If I was the enemy, what would I have learned by watching us on the field of battle for the last 20 years in Iraq, Afghanistan, Syria, other hot spots around the world, and what would I have incorporated into my battle plans? And then, of course, as I started writing, it became much more timely with 2020, and they learned a lot about us during this last year, and those lessons are certainly getting incorporated into these future battle plans. So that's the underlying theme, and that catalyst that moves the plot forward is a bioweapon. And my protagonist, James Reese, is drawn into this the plot, going after some of those people who may have helped facilitate 9/11. So it was something I've been thinking about for a long time.
You were a Navy SEAL sniper. Did you know the late Chris Kyle, the sniper?
We didn't know each other personally. No, I didn't know, but he took over for us in Iraq in 2006. I was already in Baghdad at the time, working on another special project there, so we didn't physically cross paths, but they took over for us in Iraq when we headed back in 2006, but never had the honor of meeting him.
Did he have a reputation at the time? I mean, did you all know his name?
Not yet. He was about to establish that, though.
Okay. Fascinating. Now, what's going on with Al-Qaeda today? I mean, we talked about al-Zawahiri is hiding somewhere running the show, but we don't hear much about it.
No, ISIS really took the headlines over the last decade, really. Very much more going on the offensive and obviously using social media much more to their advantage to build up recruits. Get a lot of funds going. So ISIS really kind of took over the limelight, I would say. But Al-Qaeda is certainly still out there. And the connections between Al-Qaeda and Iran are really what fascinated me as I did a lot of the research for this novel, because the that Sunni-Shia divide that you hear the experts on television talk about so often might not really be as deep of a divide as we think. And for those of us who were in Iraq in 2006, we certainly saw it. You know, we saw this the sectarian violence, that civil war that had been simmering, well, been simmering for quite some time, but in more modern times, really kicked off in Iraq with that Golden Mosque bombing in 2006. So we did see it, but there is there's also something to be said for alliances that help two different distinct groups. So Al-Qaeda in Sudan in the 90s had these ties to Hezbollah, to Iran, that you wouldn't really expect Sunni Shia organizations to have. So I got to go deep in on that, and Al-Qaeda is out there. And even with a recent assassination that's been attributed to Israel, we have Al-Qaeda affiliated people in Iran taken off the board. So it's there are connections there. There's no doubt about that.
And my intuitive gut check tells me that the next hotspot could very well be with the Iranians. What do you think?
I mean, we've been talking about that for as long as my whole 20 years in the military. Well before that, of course, 1979. We have some history there, obviously, with the Iran hostage crisis. Desert One, and what they've learned over those years, really in the early years in the 80s, is that proxies work, and they've been using proxy forces against us. Look at the Marine barracks bombing in Beirut, but they learned that proxies work. So that's made it very difficult to go after them militarily. Of course, we've had sanctions and done other things against Iran, but they've managed to avoid us going in there militarily or having a direct military confrontation, and that's because of their successful use of proxies.
You think Iran might have had something to do with 9/11, don't you?
Well, it's certainly, there's a line in the 9/11 Commission report, which I studied the whole, went through the whole book again in doing the research for this novel, and there's a sentence in there that says that the 9/11 Commission report strongly recommends that we look into an Iranian involvement in 9/11. So it says they couldn't point to anything in that report, but they recommended we look into it. And that's really the end of it. There's nothing else. I don't know how much we actually did, how much we took their advice or their recommendation from that report, but they certainly saw something and said we should look into it further. And officially, I don't know what we actually did. How far we went down that path.
The Devil's Hand by Jack Carr is available on Amazon.com. Has it hit the bookstores yet, Jack?
It has. It has. It is available anywhere books are sold. It is out there in ebook, audiobook, and hardcover.
What's it like for you to look at your book, see your name on it?
It's pretty crazy. It's in Times Square right now, up on the big billboard, and it's of course, to be out on set, watching them film the series out here, it's pretty surreal. But it's something I wanted to do my whole life, and I did all that research growing up, all that reading growing up, and I don't think I could have a better foundation from which to build.
How long are you going to be out in Los Angeles?
I go back and forth. So we live up in the mountains in Park City, so I go back and forth. Each episode has a different director, so I try to make it out here for each episode so I can thank each individual director for taking the time to devote to this project.
I'm back out there in another week plus for an extended stay, so I'll try to track you down. Maybe we can get together.
Oh, perfect. I might be here. Who knows?
That'll be fun. And when when the movie comes out of the terminal list, let's try to get you and Chris Pratt on for a little bit.
That would be fun. I'll be trying to do everything I possibly can with them to help get the word out.
How did you get the book optioned for the movie, and now it's turned into this miniseries?
Yeah, it's interesting. So I thought of Chris Pratt as I was writing it. He's the only person I wanted to play the role of my protagonist, Navy SEAL sniper James Reese. And I thought of Antoine Fuqua directing it, who directed the first episode and is the executive producer. He's just an amazing, amazing guy. But I got a call out of the blue in November of 2017, a few months before the book came out, and it was from an old SEAL buddy of mine I hadn't talked to in a few years. And he said, "Hey, I always wanted to thank you for something you did for me in the SEAL teams." And I couldn't really remember what it was, but he said, "You helped me with transition. You introduced me to people in the private sector, sat me down in your office, talked about transition, and no one else did that for me. And I've never forgotten it. Always wanted to thank you." And I said, "No problem." And he said, "I heard you have a book coming out." And I said, "Yeah, it's coming out in a few months. I have a rough draft I can send you." And he said, "Yeah, I'd like that, but I'd like to give it to a friend of mine." And I said, "No problem. Who's that?" And he said, "Chris Pratt." So Chris read it in December of 2017 and optioned it the first week in January.
And he's doing this with his own production company now, too, isn't
That's
he?
That's right. That's right. He's all in on it, and he is doing an incredible job.
So, pretty good for a guy who was living in his van, huh?
Not bad. And he's a great American, too.
Listen to more Coast to Coast AM every weeknight at 1 a.m. Eastern, and go to coasttocoastam.com for more.